I'm Rosalind I. Davenport, and I'll be reading you 17 Seconds to Midnight, a suspense novel by Rosalind I. Davenport. Let's begin. Chapter 1. The call I should have hung up on. The ferry horn sounded. Moira Lachlan kept her eyes on the grey line of the mainland and breathed the way she'd been taught 20 years ago. In 4-4. Hold 4-4. Out 4-4. The numbers clicked through her head like a metronome, steady and mechanical, drowning out the thing that wanted to claw up her throat. She'd done this before. The breathing. The counting. The slow dismantling of panic into something she could carry. It had worked in Helmand, in a ditch outside Fallujah, in the back of a lorry crossing the Syrian border, with a device the size of a shoebox ticking under her seat. It had always worked. Today, it wasn't working. She reached into her jacket pocket and pulled out the photo. Eilid, 12 years old, gap-toothed grin, school uniform slightly too big because she'd had a growth spurt over the summer and Moira hadn't had time to buy the right size. The photo was creased down the middle from living in her wallet. She traced her thumb over the edge of Eilid's face, the curve of her cheek, the way her hair fell across one eye. The last time she'd seen that face in person was 3 weeks ago, dropping Eilid off at school, a quick kiss on the forehead, a promise to call on Thursday. She'd called on Thursday. Eilid had been distracted, talking to a friend in the background, and Moira had let her go because the job was waiting and the ferry was leaving and there was always next week. The ferry pitched. A spray of salt water hit her cheek, cold and sharp. She tucked the photo away and went back to the breathing. Four in. Four hold. Four out. The mainland dissolved into a smear of grey and green. Stroma was close now. The lighthouse rose against the bruise-coloured sky, a white needle that seemed to pierce the clouds, and the research station huddled at its base like a child clinging to a parent's leg. 3 weeks of work. Rewiring the old generator, replacing the security system, making the place safe for the marine biologists who studied the seal colony. Routine. Simple. The kind of job she took because it paid well and didn't ask questions. The kind of job that let her sleep at night, because the alternative was thinking about the things she'd done in places that didn't have names on any map she'd ever seen. Her phone buzzed. She pulled it out. The screen showed Eilid's name. For a second, the relief was so sharp it hurt. Eilid, calling to say goodnight, to complain about homework, to tell her some stupid thing her dad had said. Moira almost smiled. She swiped to answer. Hey, sweetheart, Ms. Lachlan. The voice was soft. Male. Scottish, but with an edge she couldn't place, like the words had been filed down to something smooth and dangerous, the kind of voice that didn't raise questions because it had already answered them before you thought to ask. Moira's hand tightened on the phone. Who is this? You're going to listen carefully. You're not going to hang up. You're not going to call anyone. If you do, your daughter dies. The words landed like a punch to the chest. She opened her mouth to speak, but the voice kept going, unhurried, almost gentle, the tone of a man who had all the time in the world and knew exactly how to use it. Eilid's favourite stuffed toy is a seal. She calls him Mungo. He's missing a button eye. She sleeps with him every night, tucked under her left arm. Moira's knees went weak. She grabbed the rail with her free hand, the metal cold and rough against a palm. Where is she? Where is my daughter? I'll get to that. 3 days ago you bought paracetamol, a pack of plasters and a bottle of Rabina at Boots in Thurso. You paid cash. The cashier was a young man with acne and a lip ring. He smiled at you. You didn't smile back. She remembered. The headache that wouldn't quit, a dull throb behind her left eye that had followed her through the chemist's aisles, the blister on her heel from the new boots, the way she'd limped past the greeting cards without looking at them, the Rabina because Eilid liked it, and Moira was going to see her in 2 weeks and wanted to have something in the flat for her. Something that said, I was thinking of you, without having to say the words out loud. She remembered the cashier. The smile. The way she'd nodded and walked out without a word, because she'd been thinking about the job, about the generator, about whether she'd remembered to pack the right tools. You've been watching me, she said. Her voice came out flat, controlled. The same voice she'd used to talk a Taliban commander into letting her pass through a checkpoint. The same voice she'd used to keep a young soldier from bleeding out while the medevac circled overhead. The same voice she'd used to tell Eilid that Daddy wasn't coming home. And everything was going to be okay, even though nothing was okay, and nothing would be okay for a long time. I've been preparing, the voice said.